Che
Come
questo
professore ricorda.
accordo?
Sahanavavatu, Sahanaubhunaktu, Sahavivyam karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So today we're doing what we planned for last week, 12 to 18 shlokas in chapter 10. So, Subbu, do you want to chant?
Yeah, I can. One sec.
Okay.
Let me just share.
Okay.
Just a minute, please. Yeah. Just.
If you want, I can share and you can read from your book. No issues.
Yeah, okay. That would be.
Yeah. Oh, you already got it.
Just 1 minute. Let me try this once again. Just again. Sorry. Can you see this now? Okay,
Yes.
we'll start with 10.11. I think last time we didn't discuss 11. So from 11 to 18 is what we could start in terms of chanting. Yeah. And just so verse number 10.11. तेषामेवानुकम्पार्थम् अहमज्ञानजं तमः नाशयाम्यात्मभावस्तः ज्ञानदीपेन भास्वथा अनुकम्पार्थम् एव औट् ऑफ कम्पैशन तेषां फॉर देम अहम् ऐ आत्मभावस्तः रिमेनिंग इन देयर इंटेलेक्ट Nashayami, destroy tamaha, the darkness, ajnanajam, born of ignorance, vasvata, jnanadipena, by the brilliant light of knowledge. Out of compassion for them, I remaining in their intellect, destroy the darkness born of ignorance by the brilliant light of knowledge. Verse number 12. Arjuna uvacha. परम ब्रह्म परं धाम पवित्रं परमं भवान् पुरुषं शाश्वतं दिव्यं आदिदेवमजं विभुम् आहुस्त्वामर्ष्यस्य सर्वे देवर्षीर्नारदस्तथा असितो देवलो व्यासः स्वयं चैव ब्रवीषि मे अर्जुन उवाच अर्जुन आस्ट भवान यू आर परब्रह्मम् द सुप्रीम ब्रह्मन् परंधाम द सुप्रीम अबोड परमं पवित्रम द सुप्रीम होली सर्व सर्वे ऋषयः ऑल द सेजेस देवर्षि नारदः इंक्लूडिंग द डिवाइन सेज नारदा असिता असिता व्यासः एज वेल एज व्यासा देवाल आहुत्वम स्पीक ऑफ यू पुरुषम एज द सेल्फ ऑफ ऑल शाश्वतम एटर्नल दिव्यम डिवाइन आदिदेवम द प्राइमरी गॉड अजम बर्थलेस विभुम एंड ऑल परवेसिव स्वयं च एव यू आर ऑल्सो ब्रवीषि मे यू आर टेलिंग मी द सेम सो वर्स 12 एंड 13 Arjuna asked, You are the supreme Brahman, the supreme light, the supremely holy. All the sages, including the divine sages Narada, Asita, Devala, as well as Vyasa, speak of you as the self of all, eternal, divine, the primary God, worthless and all pervasive. And you are also telling me the same. Verse number 14. सर्वमेतद्रुतं मन्ये यन्मां वदसि केशव नहि ते भगवन् व्यक्तिं विधुर्देवानधानवाः Keshava, O Krishna, Manye, I consider, Sarvam Yetat, all this, Yad Vadasi Mam, which you tell me, Ritam, to be true, he, because, Na Deva, neither the gods, Na Dhanava, nor the demons, Viduhu, no, Te Vyaktim, your manifestation, Bhagavan, O Lord. O Krishna, I consider all this which you tell me to be true, because neither the gods nor the demons know your manifestation, O Lord. Verse number 15. Swayamevatmanatmanam vetattam purushottama bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. Purushottam, O Supreme Purusha, Krishna, Bhuta Bhavana, the creator of all beings, Bhuteshu, the sustainer of all beings, Deva Deva, the god of all gods, Jagatpate, the protector of the universe, Tvam Swayam Vetat, you alone know, Atmanam, yourself, Atmana Eva, by yourself. O Krishna, the creator of all beings, the sustainer of all beings, the god of all gods, and the protector of the universe, you alone know yourself by yourself. Verse number 16. Vaktum marhasya sheshena divya hyatma vibhutayaha yabhir bhutir yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan imam stvam vyapya tishtasi arhasi asheshena. You should completely vyaktum, narrated, divyaha atma vibhuteyaha, those divine glories, yabihi vibhutihi, by which glories, tvam vishtasi vyapya, you remain pervading, iman lokan, these worlds. You should completely narrate those divine glories of yours, by which glories you remain pervading these worlds. Verse number 17. Katham vidyamaham yogin tvam sada parichintayan keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan maya. Yogin, O Lord of all powers, sada parichintayan, constantly thinking, tvam, of you, katham aham vidyam, how can I know your true nature? Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, in what all objects, asi chintaya, are you to be meditated upon? Maya, by me, Bhagavan, O Lord. O Lord of all powers, constantly thinking of you, how can I know your true nature? In what all objects are you to be meditated upon by me, O Lord? Verse number 10.18. Vistarenatmano yogam vibhutim cha janardhana huyah kataya tripdirhi shranvate nasti membritham. Janardhana, O Krishna, kataya, tell me, huya, again, atmanaha yogam, about your power, cha vibhutim, and manifestation, vistarena, in detail, he, because astina tripti, there is no satisfaction, me, for me. Shranvataha, whom I am listening, amritam, to the nectar of words. O Krishna, tell me again about your power and manifestation in detail, because there is no satisfaction for me who is listening to the nectar of your words. Om Tat Sat. Over to you, Rajesh.
Thank you, Subhu. Fantastic. Okay. So anyone? I heard a lot of people had a lead on some of us because, you know, you prepared for the last class itself. So it looks like you're mulled over these slokas. for a lot longer than some of us. So maybe you can start off.
I think as far as 10.11 is concerned, one point which came out very strongly was the fact that, Krishna takes the responsibility, of lighting the lamp of knowledge. So he says that, I will send you the guru, or Bhagavan will himself come as a guru when the Arjuna is ready. So, and it is completely coming out of anukampena, which is compassion. And he says that he will go through with you in terms of what you need to do from moving from a Ekarupa, Virat Rupa to Arupa, Bhagwan. So I thought this is one place where God himself takes the responsibility of saying that he will lead you step by step into, realizing himself. So, so I thought that was very beautiful. We didn't cover this in the last week's discussion because we stopped with, I think, 10. So I just thought I'll mention about verse number 11.
I'd like to comment on this verse also. In Swami Dayananda's Bhagavad Gita home study, talking about where is the Lord. And just from here, he says, I am the one who obtains in the vritti, in the very thought of the seeker, as pratag atma. I obtain in your mind as aham, 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 purely in the form of awareness. As Ishwara, I shine in the form of your own swarupa. So in terms, this is where Swami talks about, it can be misconstrued that the Lord is somewhere else, but the Lord is really ourselves and obtains in the sense of I. I also want to read from that, this part, and he writes, you do not gain this knowledge. In every other knowledge, there is a subject, a dhyana karta, a knower involved and an object of knowledge. In the knowing, this is a pot, for example. The pot is an object which is objectified by me through my mind. Because I am the one who objectifies the pot, I say, this is a pot. In this, here's the important part, the subject is not canceled. It is retained, and the object is known by the subject. This is true in all forms of knowledge. But when it comes to Atma-yana, the kartvam itself is destroyed. The notion that I am the knower is destroyed by the knowledge that I am pure awareness, which is Brahman. To me, the underlying understanding here is that although the intellect as if brings us to the guru, puts us in front of the guru to obtain shabda pramana, it is the self that knows the self. It is the awareness aware of itself. This is not like every, as we know, this knowing is being. This is not I knowing knowledge, I having the knowledge. I am what is revealed. But let me take it a step further. For me, in my own exposure to Swami Dayananda, there's an amazing peace that comes from this. Because all of us have a somewhat, some more so, negative sense of the small self. And who am I to get this knowledge? And even if I got it, how could I obtain it? How could I keep it? And this reveals that there is no obtaining. There is, that also means there is no losing it. It is simply me. And recognizing that, affirming that, is a tremendous way to negate everything else the mind comes up with. But I think this is an incredibly important, exciting, and peace-giving understanding.
Beautiful.
Excellent. Beautiful.
It's beautiful, Rick. I think this 11 has to be seen in conjunction with 10, so that's how it sort of flows in. When he talks about the Buddhi Yoga in verse number 10. And then he says he will light the lamp of knowledge.
Yeah, and I think, Rick, I was reading some parts of the same thing you are talking about from the home study. And The other thing in Swami C in one of the, it's probably not for 10.11, but somewhere, let me just see. My pages might be different from you all because this is an old book. He says, this is for 10.15. He says, you yourself know yourself by yourself. I like that. It's the same thing Swami Dayananda is saying, but also, I think you had pointed out last time, you know, try to understand the Vedanta or the Gita by that being the Shabda Pramana, which means the words are the instrument. Meaning, he says here, once it has placed itself in a situation where such knowledge can take place, it does nothing further. It is us. Basically us as individuals, like a river that has come to a point from where it sights the ocean. So which is kind of like what Arjuna is saying, like, I want to see the ocean. After that, it does not do anything. The ocean takes care of it. It is the same here. You're going to a teacher and exposing yourself to the teaching is all done by your own will. It does not happen automatically. You have to place yourself in a condition from where knowledge can take place. Then the words simply take over. That's a very nice paragraph. But it's basically you yourself know yourself by yourself. So somehow that kind of resonated with me quite a bit when I was reading through this. And Krishna is also talking about his glory, and Arjuna increasingly wants to see it, and Swami C says, you know, the curiosity is just going increasing quite a bit, setting us up for chapter 11, I guess.
Yeah, so Guns and Rick, you know, well said, you know, but I want to just kind of, you know, move the discussion a little bit more from the quote unquote the theoretical part of what the shloka means to what it really means to our life. So if here's a question that I have, right? The question is, okay, if Bhagwan is saying, okay, out of compassion for you, I will give you that knowledge. Okay, it's Bhagwan will take care, that's fine. Okay, so what do we have to do to prepare ourselves to do that, to get that knowledge? Because it's already there, we know that, but sometimes we are not able to accept it, or like what Rick, you used that word, I'm not able to recall. We have a wrong view of who we are. So from a practical perspective, on a day-to-day basis, what is it that we have to do if Bhagwan is to take care of everything else?
I think what Supa was just mentioning, no, you should read this in conjunction with the previous verses. Previous Correct. Verses, he talks about Buddhi Yoga. The ever steadfast worshiping me with love, I give the Buddhi Yoga by which they come to me. Beyond that, you know, Bhagwan will help you, is what this shloka says. But yeah, you need to work to get to that Buddhi Yoga itself, is my understanding.
I'm saying let's spend a few minutes to unpack what that preparation means for us.
So let me take a stab at this also. I totally agree with what you're asking, Rajesh, as what our focus needs to be. And I think the everyday life aspect of this is, you know, we've come across this before, and Swami P definitely talks about how you have to affirm what it is, who we are. And that's a matter of mananam, going over, reflecting, accepting. And it's a matter of gaining steadiness, nididhyasanam, in that. So when the mind froths in whatever way it does, whatever the content of the mind is, if I can just acknowledge that I am the awareness that knows the mind, I am not the content of the mind, then at any given moment, you step away, truly step away. Because awareness itself has all the life we've lived, all the thoughts we've had, we've not been able to lasso awareness. Lassos remain undefined, unconfined, and it's true every moment and can never be anything other than that. And if we use our mental arena to simply show us that continuously, that's also what gives us the freedom to separate from strong emotions, strong desires, because it's the same. But I think it begins more with just everyday thoughts and eventually gains the kind of power that it's all subsumed. It's all dissolves because it has its mitya. Mitya can't capture satyam.
Thank you, Rick. Gund,
Kishore. Yeah, sorry.
I see a lot of hands raised. Kishore, you want to go first? I think I saw your hand first.
Sure. Yeah, just I think great question, Rajesh. I think that's an important one that we should ask every time. I'm sure most of us want to know what does it mean in practical terms on a day-to-day basis. So, Rick, to your point, I agree. And a question then would be, as we get pulled into the day-to-day thoughts, like, you know, what you are having to deal with, whether it's thoughts or other things that you are engaged in, we can only contemplate that if the mind is available, as in you're able to kind of catch it, right? You need to be able to step out of that day-to-day moment, my moment happenings around you, the around you, to be able to do that, right? You see what I mean? Like you should be able to observe your mind to be able to say, oh yeah, you know, I see that my mind is disturbed, but hey, it is not me, right? It is the mind that's disturbed, right? And to be able to see that, to be able to discriminate that, you still need to be able to step out of that, which means that you need to be able to be aware of your mind in that sense, right? And that's only possible if the mind is also quiet to some extent. Otherwise, you're just caught up in the moment and in the activities of the moment. So the question then is, like, how do we, is it a question of practice that on a daily basis we catch our mind as often as possible, to be aware of our mind as often as possible? And this is the practice that we do in day-to-day activities, right? I mean, that's the question. And I'll just finish by, actually, I'm reading Swami C's paragraph regarding this. He says, when through the above process of bringing the mind to quietude, a meditator has succeeded in arresting the mind's agitations and has consequently lifted the veiling from his intellect, he comes to the state of transcendental experience or samadhi, which is the fulfillment of buddhi yoga. That's what he says in, for, I think, 10. So, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. I would love to hear what others and you have to say.
A good comment, Kishore. Gunz?
Hey, yeah, beautiful, Kishore. And that's something that we all kind of, you know, have a spectrum of practices, right, on the meditation front. And that's never really fully resolved, or we don't recognize it. That's definitely something to continuously work on. I see another aspect also here, which I was just before our satsang here started, I was reading this, which I found very interesting. Right after 10.18, you'll see Swami C says, a student of philosophy and for that matter, a true student of any knowledge should have insatiable thirst to understand, know, appreciate. And then he just, you know, elaborates on that. If he is to be assured of any progress, anxiety to listen, jignasa, has been recognized as one of the, you know, great noblest qualities, unavoidable for a fit student. Then later he says, it is a volatile, it's, you know, the mind, the internal mind is very volatile, but it I am never satisfied with listening to the nectarine words of your discourses, is kind of what Arjuna is implying. And then Swami C says, no doubt it is true. Satsang has a chastening effect upon all intelligent and interested listeners. So Guntax, to answer your question, what we are doing here is extremely important, because for everyday life, our discussions here keep coming back to our minds, like Monday through Saturday, right, until we meet again. I think that's extremely important. Plus, if we spend some time meditating upon the words and, you know, preparing for the next cycle, we don't let that curiosity kind of fade away. It keeps on increasing. And that is super important for us to continue to learn and understand and live the teaching also at the same time, right? I think you were getting at the practical implication for everyday life. That's, I think, Swami C addresses here. But then going back to chapter 6, I think that's what Kishore is talking about. Like, you have to spend some time observing your mind. Somehow you have to do it. And I don't know how to do it in like when we go to work. I'm finding it very hard. Like, but somehow being able to observe not just our minds, but just basic observation, I think, will be very helpful.
So I think it's also important to recognize here that the judgment that we all make as individuals is incorrect. We're not ever really bound. And I know that's a lot of the energy that we're talking about, how to diffuse. Part of diffusing it is acknowledging our true nature. Going back, as Kishore is indicating, to meditating on it, you're not always going to catch it in the moment. But if you catch it even afterwards, the next time you may catch it during, the next time you may catch it before it happens. But no matter what is occurring as the content of the mind, we are ever free of that content. And that's also the importance of meditation, to acknowledge, to affirm, to feel the joy too that goes with knowing I'm not in a state of war here. The Lord's grace is always ever with me. I can never be apart from it. I think it's important to acknowledge that and to really embrace that, because that makes it easier not to be judging ourselves and not to be always judging, well, how far away am I? How worked up is the mind? Because it all proves nothing. And you cannot be other than aware. It's your nature. You will always be aware. Recognizing it, understanding what that awareness is where the freedom comes. We don't become free people. We become free of the person. The person's never going to become who we are. But if we're free of the person's also not an impediment.
Beautiful, Rick. Thanks, Guru. Subbu?
Yeah, so, you know, I have been hearing to Swami P on the subject. So how Swami P explains it is what I will share here. So he says, you know, the first stage is to understand that God is the creator of the universe, right? He says the next stage is, you know, if God is a creator of the universe, where did he get the material for the creation of the universe? And when you answer that question, the answer that you will get is that God himself is the Upadana Karana and the Nimitta Karana. Okay? When you start to believe in this phase of Upadana Karana, Nimitta Karana, is when the transformation takes place, because now what you're saying is anything and everything that you see is nothing but the vibhuti of the Lord, right? So whatever you are engaging in, whatever you are seeing inside. So if you see verse number 7 and 8, it tells very clearly that, you know, he states that, you know, the vibhuti in the external world is etc., etc. And then he says the vibhuti in the internal world of mind, body, senses, etc. also are his, right? So the moment you start seeing as, you know, God is everything that you see, then you're moving from Ekarupa Ishvara to Anekarupa Ishvara. okay, which is what he is calling as a Virat Bhakta, right? And it is for this Virat Bhakta that he is saying that he is dear to me and I will take him now to the next step by lighting the lamp of knowledge, right? And if you see, I will correlate this question with verse number 6.30, okay, where he says, Yomam paschati sarvatra sarvam cha mai paschati tasyaham na pranasyami sacha me na pranasyati. That is, he says, he who sees me everywhere, just the Virat Bhakta that he's talking about, okay, and sees everything in me, to him I do not get lost and he does not get lost to me, okay, right? So he's close to me and I'm close to him, and it is for this Virat Bhakta that he's giving this assurance of the Buddhi Yoga, saying that, hey, you know what? You have reached a certain stage now of now understanding that I am not only the creator, but also the universe itself. God itself is appearing as a universe. So I'm seeing God everywhere and enjoying his vibhutis. Now I will take you to the next step, which is Arupa Ishvara, which is through the Jnana Yoga, for which I'm giving you the Buddhi Yoga of lighting the lamp of knowledge in your heart. Right? So this is my take. I think this is how Swami P actually explains it.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Beautiful. Let's
probably go through everybody who has raised their hands. And then probably we can quickly summarize. Srini.
Yeah. See, I am also in the same lines of Subbu. We have to connect the chapter 10 with, chapter 7, chapter 9. So, if you ask me personally, the most important sloka in the chapter 9 was he promises to everybody that I will take care of you if you totally do a sanagati to me, which means that whatever guilt factor is available with you till you had this time, that is definitely going to change, because he says even if you are a thief, if you are a criminal or whatever it is, whatever your past is, if you are able to surrender to me totally, then I will totally take care of you. So that is one. And I think this is the phase where, like Subbu was saying, he is also trying to establish himself as the supreme authority, that you don't have to go to anybody at all. For example, if you see the first Shatakam, he was always saying, you need to do everything. You need to find your consciousness by yourself. You need to go and check out who a guru is and try to find a guru. But here he says, you don't have to go like that. All you have to do is to surrender to me, come to me, and I myself will find a guru for you, which is again a part of 10.11. And in case I'm not able to get a guru for you, I will become the guru of you, and then teach you the Brahma Vidya, and then exit you out of the samsara. So which means that like you said, what it is personally to us is to understand the process. So in technical terms, we call it SOP, standard operating procedure. So all of yesterday was, we were doing it in different, bits and pieces. We do some puja here. We think God is in Kailasha or God is somewhere else. But ultimately, when we understand that, God is now here with us and everything is a part of God, then the entire, the thinking process changes. So your attitude towards, the entire world changes. So this is what is required, this is what is required as a practice. So abhyasa means, developing the practice of getting attracted to God. So, which doesn't come, naturally, until the God is the best, you will never get attracted. So this Swami P also says, if you want to, understand, or if you want to, respect somebody, you should know more about that person. So when you see a person for the first time, you do not know about the person. But when you keep seeing him, when you know about him, and when you know about his achievements, then you get more attached to the person, you start respecting the person. So that is what, the entire Vibhuti Yoga, Krishna is trying to, like I usually say, trying to market himself as the supreme authority. And he also makes our life easier, saying that all you have to do is only come to me. Don't go to anybody else. You come to me, you have full faith and belief in me, I will take care of you. So that is what is up to 10-11. And from 10-12 to 10-18, I was just, browsing just before we started the session, is mostly Krishna trying to give the brightness of Arjuna trying to speak more about Krishna, so that he can get the exact details of what exactly this vibhuti is all about. So So that is what is going to happen from 19 to say 37, where Krishna is going to explain his vibhutis one by one. And now Swami P puts it, now trying to, you know, now Arjuna is trying to butter Krishna to the extent that, you know, he will give all his vibhutis. And he says, you know, don't give me the vibhutis total. Give me those vibhutis which will be suitable for us. And later on, I can take it as a alambana or as a indicator to do my Vishwarupa meditation. So that is where it is. So if you ask me personally, so this entire process of you know, changing your attitude towards God, from God is somewhere at Kailasha or Parkadal, we take God to be everywhere, and this shift in thinking process is required. As Guns was saying, it is not that easy. Once we get into our work, we again feel that it is me who is saying all this. So we need to start practicing this, that it is not me, but you know, it is all God or Krishna behind me doing all this. So I think that a shift in practice is what is required, is my take. Thank you.
Thank you, Srini.
Well, along with that, I would say, as Srini has indicated, when we accept that there's only God, there is no me apart from thee. There is no nothing about my world that is other than the Lord. And if I really can't be separated, again, that points to the joy, it points to the peace, it points to the fact that no matter what is appearing, it can never take us away. That's why, to me, Vedanta, I always come back to one sentence: there is no second thing. There's nothing other than what, than awareness. There is no second thing. And the more we know that, we're not at war with the appearance. The other thing is, I mean, Mithya is Mithya, but in the job that living the life in the world, I think it's also very helpful to recognize these are just roles. You know, it's like the actor playing the role. It's not really me. It's just the role that is being called upon. It's also, I would say, and this is really poorly understood from Hinduism, it is the essence of Buddhism. There is no sect. There is no me. There's only Buddha mind. There is no individual. That's why there's no, the nothingness or the voidness is really to indicate there's no second thing. There's nothing apart. There's no entity to get realized. There's no entity to be apart. There is only Buddha mind. It's exactly, in my understanding, the same thing.
Excellent. Excellent, Rick. Never separate us from God. I think we should now relate ourselves to God only. And either we are doing it like God or God is doing inside us. So it can be either way. Thank you, Rick. Excellent.
Beautiful. Uday?
Profound insight.
Guntax, just to your question, right? What is it that we need to do to get to that point? I think the ninth shloka, ninth verse, addresses that point exactly, right? There are three things. One is, with a mind wholly turned to me, with their senses absorbed in me, is the second thing. And the third thing is discussing with one another about all this stuff, right? So shloka number 9 is the answer to the question verbatim. Yeah, that's what I just wanted to point out.
Thank you, Uday. Subbu, back to you again.
Yeah, basically, just to, you know, I mean, I had the same thought of what Udesh has shared. That is that Machitnaha Matkata Prana shloka, you know, where he says, you know, the Virat Bhakta takes, you know, happiness in actually discussing about me and, you know, talking about my glories. But I think, you know, two other points I thought I will share, you know. So we mentioned that the Virat Bhakta is a person who has made the transition from God is a creator to God is everywhere, because it is the Upadana Karna and the Nimittana Karna. So that was there. Now, therefore, what is the output of this Virat Bhakta? So somebody wants to understand, where am I, right? So a lot of people want to know, you know, where am I in this journey, etc. So what he says is, a Virat Bhakta, since he's seen God everywhere and everything he sees as God, he doesn't have jealousy. And he says, what goes down for a Virat Bhakta, the output is a mitigation of Raga Dvesha, because there is no more preferences and likes and dislikes that he actually has, because he's now seeing God everywhere in every interaction. If I'm talking, it is the vibhuti of the Lord that I'm talking. If you're listening, it is a vibhuti of the Lord that you're listening, right? So anything and everything that you see in this world, something extraordinary, you know, this is what Arjuna is saying, you know, don't give me the list of everything because I know everything is God, but give me the extraordinary things, you know, and list them is what he's asking, you know, Krishna in the next few verses, right? So one is that. So the output is this. And therefore, what is the input that the bhakta needs to do or the, you know, the sadhaka needs to do is, you know, same thing what, you know, thinking of me everywhere, no, which is what has come in the earlier verse, right? 8.9 or something. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamunismara yudhyacha. That is, you know, at all times, at all places, at all, this one, think of me, right? That is the reiteration that it comes. And then he says, yomam paschati sarvatra sarvam cha mai paschati. That is, whoever is doing this is dear to me and I will not let him go. And it is this bhakta that he's talking about that he will move from the bhakta stage, Virata bhakta stage, to the arupa jnana by giving him the jnana and lightening the spirit of knowledge. Okay, this is one thing which I wanted to share. The second thing is, I think there was a discussion about knowing yourself by yourself, right? So I think there, it's a very, you can link it very technically also with the verses that is actually going by, because he says, you know, even the Sanat Kumara, you know, the people, the gods and demigods do not know fully about you because they came out of you. So, you know, you are the only one who can tell me about yourself. So knowing yourself by yourself. Similarly, he says, you know, even the devas cannot understand you fully because, you know, if the devas cannot understand you, what of the asuras, right? Because devas have a pure mind. Asuras have an impure mind. Even with such purity, they are not able to understand you yourself. And therefore, I take whatever you say as true because there is nobody else who can validate this for me. Neither the gods, the demigods, or the devas, or the asuras, or the rishis, any nobody can validate this for me. So I take whatever you say as truth. And therefore, the only way to know you is to know yourself by yourself. I mean, he's telling this to Krishna, saying that, you know, you're the only one who can tell me about yourself. So I can get to know you only from you. So that is the linkage here.
Excellent. Excellent, Subbu. Just to add on to what Subbu said, you know, Swami P has got a very, you know, very peculiar way of putting this. You know, like Rajesh was asking, na, how we should develop and, you know, what is the indicator that we have actually, you know, improved our development to Virat Bhakta. He says, only in the Indian culture, there is this Namaskara, you know, which is available. So he says, the very activity of doing a Namaskara itself is that you are surrendering to the next person. So in fact, of course, to a guru, we do a Namaskara. He says to the extent that whomever you see, you got to do a Namaskara. No? And he also goes to the extent of saying that even if it is an ant or a mosquito or even a small insect, na, you should do a Namaskara. So it means not a literal Namaskara, but you know, inside your mind, you should feel that even the ant, the mosquito or whatever, no, the honeybee has got the chaitanyam inside its own body, which means that, you know, it is only God. So I think this kind of the attitudinal change, if we can develop, at least, you know, not to the, you know, birds or animals, at least to the humans, if we can develop, and, you know, we can develop this attitude of feeling anybody, you know, is a Atman in himself. I think that itself is going to be a big change. So if you ask me, what is the change, you know, you will find it within yourself, is that you see anybody, you feel like, you know, doing a Namaskara to him, if not, you know, physically, or at least within your mind. So I think I thought I should say this because Subbu was very explicitly explaining how this change should happen. I think this is how, you know, you can feel the change within yourselves. So something to add on to what Subbu said. Thanks.
No, nice. Beautiful. So, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, collect all the threads what we've been talking about, right? And at one end of the spectrum, you know, we're saying, I mean, I'm not saying it's a spectrum, but we are saying that, okay, we need to have the mind available and then we need to have a better understanding. Then we need to remove the wrong understanding of what we are. And then we are saying that, okay, look at the entire universe as one. And, you know, you are also there, but it's just, there's no difference between you and the universe. You know, we are saying all these things. But then let's combine all this thread and go back to the question that what Gunz was saying, right, in the conversation when he explained, know yourself by yourself. And then you're saying, okay, but how does it happen when I go to workplace, it does not happen? How do you apply that learning in a workplace, for example?
Rajesh, this is Vidya. I just wanted to acknowledge what, you know, Srini and Rick and Subbu and everybody said. I really liked how Srini said that start with thinking everybody from ants to bees to everyone has that Chaitanya. And that's how you can actually work even in workplace. Because we are looking at every living being as who you are, or your Chaitanya. So you start with the human beings also, correct? And when you start with human beings at work, you may have differences in speaking about what you're thinking to what their ideas are or what your ideas are. But the moment you think that if you were in their place, you would say the same thing. And if they were in your place, they would say the same thing, correct? So when you start looking at that in that perspective, you would hear them much clearer. And it's the power when you start hearing them in a clear way. Your answer to them would be in a way that they understand, start understanding you. So I have actually noticed that. When I think about them saying something and I feel that it's me who is saying, and I go back to thinking about how they are saying, not losing the focus of what I wanted to say, I'm able to articulate it much better, the solution, and they understand that. And they are able to, you know, their tone changes, totally changes from being a aggressive person to a soft person understanding what I'm saying. And then all of us come together to a place where we can solve. So I think you can do that just by thinking that every sentient, insentient, both I would include in this topic, and leaving the ahankara that we have. So once we start taking out the ahankara and we start thinking that every living being has that Chaitanya, your listening power, your way of thinking totally changes. So, and another way I've been practicing is even while making food or anything for my son or for my husband or anybody per se, just thinking that even that food has that Chaitanya, that I'm, you know, cutting that kheera or palak, that also has that very important thing that it's giving me, that annam. Even that has Chaitanya. Start from that to, you know, human beings, and you will see the difference. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Everybody has said the same thing, but I'm just reiterating.
Well said, Vidya. We got three hands raised. Guns, going back to you.
Hey, sorry. Let me just sit here. After I raised my hand, I went upstairs and came downstairs. Okay. Vidya, that was so beautiful. Actually, when you were talking, I remembered when I wrote the part one of the book, our publisher is called Indica. And the founder of Indica, he started a thing called Institute of Indic Wisdom. And they have a website and all that. And then they formed, it has different parts to that. One of them is called, now it is called Institute of Indic Wisdom. It used to be Institute for Consciousness or something like that. And there were three founders, and I think, Guntax, you know one of them, Prasad Kaipa in California, and two others who are in India. And these three people run that. And one of the key things that they have introduced is conscious leadership. What they mean by that conscious leadership is basically what you were just saying. So I just love the way you described it. Like when you are talking, you be aware of yourself and you extend that awareness to the other person. You might even go one step further, is talk to them about that, like what you have been doing. And that just enormously increases the effectiveness of the communication. And in fact, you can keep extending it to everything else, just like you said, all your actions and interactions in a small meeting, one-on-one meetings, or bigger presentations, and so on. I try to do that, I have to say it is a great thing that can work for all of us.
Thank you, Guns. Subbu.
Yeah, I think wonderfully said, Vidya and Guns. I think one of the shifts that we spoke about is that a Virat Bhakta is now seeing God everywhere, right? When you start believing in this, okay, to start with, I think you first break this barrier of us versus them. Okay? Because everything that you see, yourself and people around you and all the things, creation, beings, everything around you as part of Brahman, right? So you have this mental attitude of an inclusive approach to an us versus them approach. So I think that's the first thing that, you know, comes across, right? And once you do this, when you say it is us versus, you know, you, it is inclusive in nature, then you're no different from the person. And therefore, you know, it is like how you treat your own friend and family, right? It's not like treating somebody very differently because, you know, my point is better than your point. You're not getting into that conclusion and judgment immediately. Second thing that we said was a Virat Bhakta is the one who has, you know, completely, at least to a large extent, mitigated the Raga Dvesha. So there is no likes and dislikes here. Okay. Likes and dislikes only come when you start looking at it from a personal point. The moment you start looking at it holistically, you will not have likes and dislikes. You'll only have preferences. I would prefer to have this way, but if it is not, it is fine. Maybe God wanted me to go through this in a certain way. Maybe there's a learning for me. Maybe there's a learning for him. Okay. Sometimes situations come up that way. Right. So I think that is a big shift itself, right? When you start including people as part of the discussion and making this transition happen. Because when you're doing that, you're coming with an unbiased mind. You're coming with a place where, you know, you can hear the person out. You can deliberate the reason the person out very logically. And they will, trust me, I have tried this also. And I find it very beautiful and useful. Because I always say that, you know, spirituality has led, you know, helped me in my leadership. And, you know, and there are lots of lessons one can take from this. So this is one big shift, I thought, this one. Second is, the other aspect of Virat Bhakta is, he's the best karma yogi. Because he is a person who accepts everything as Ishvara Prasada. When you accept everything in life, okay, it leads to a positive environment, and at the same time, you're not hassled by what is going on in your life at the moment. There are no disturbances. You are at peace with yourself because you feel this is exactly how, you know, it should have gone. There is a reason why this has happened in a way. There's always a reason, a season, you know, for anything to happen. So you believe in that, and therefore you don't get agitated. So outside outcomes do not impact you anyway, right? The third thing I would say is, whatever your interaction with, no, constantly keep repeating, you know, when you look at a flower, you say, hey, you know, Brahman is, you know, giving today an offering to me as a flower. You actually see a very beautiful thing. You're always, you know, he says, actually, give me a list of things. Why? Because the mind is always attracted towards what is beautiful, right? And the mind always craves for a support. Mind cannot be quiet at any point in time. You know, it is very difficult to quieten the mind. So mind requires a support. So he says, give me the vibhutis, give me the extraordinary things, which is beautiful, where I can choose one for whom I can meditate upon, right? So anytime you interact with, okay, somebody, you see him singing very well, beautiful. You appreciate the vibhuti that is there. Somebody, you know, is able to give this lecture so beautifully, you know, and, you know, explain the point. You understand the vibhuti that God himself is speaking to you and giving you this deliverance. The moment we start thinking internally, see, it's an internal process. Nobody needs to know it externally. You don't have to proclaim to the world. But if it's an internal process, you will soon see you are accepting everybody and everybody else is accepting you.
Beautiful, so Subbu. Thank you. Thank you.
Excellent. Kishore. Excellent, Subbu. Excellent.
Kishore.
Thank you. Thank you, Subbu. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, excellent. And I completely agree. I'll just put a different another perspective, if you will. And this is again based on my own personal practice. You know, to be able to think along those lines also, that is this what comes first kind of a problem in some ways. You need a mind that's somewhat quiet. To be able to, in an instant when, you know, because we have our existing nature is still present, right? If anger is part of our existing nature, that's going to come up in a situation. If jealousy is part of it, it's going to come up, greed and so on. So those things are bubbling up because the situation causes it to bubble up, right? And at that moment, it is not easy to step back and say, yes, anger is part of my mind, it's part of my nature, and that's okay because I'm not my mind. It's hard at the moment to be able to step back from it and to observe it and let it pass. Because you're caught up in that anger, you're caught up in the situation. So, so there is this chicken and egg problem in some ways. And maybe it is not once you cross that stage, perhaps, where you're able to hold back and even regardless of the situation, you're able to stay with the higher level of awareness as yourself and then be able to separate yourself from the mind, right? But even to do that, you need a mind as an initial step. You need a quieter mind. So the way I look at it, at least personally, and it's probably a slightly different take. The way I look at it is basically that the choices we make regarding the situation. I know Gunz, you said work, but then it's not just work. Obviously, it's a placeholder for anything, any situation is kind of what I see. Day-to-day situations. The one that really helped me, a couple of things that helped me in this process is still helping me, obviously, is adherence to some kind of framework. What Subbu and others mentioned is one type of framework. It's yet another one then would be for me the adherence to let's say a couple of very core values like ahimsa, right? As an example, right? So if we are able to in that situation, our response to that situation and the way I'm thinking about it is, what response will lead to more peace of mind? Right? What response, if I respond in a particular way, and I have multiple ways of responding to a situation, if I respond, which response will lead to a higher level of peace of mind? So in if you choose it that way, then you're going to choose ahimsa, right? You're going to say things that, regardless of the situation, you want personal peace of mind, not because you're selfish, because that is the energy that you will then transmit outward later on from that peace. Because that peace is where your awareness is going to reflect in that peace, right? And that's when you're going to have you're going to go more towards that awareness. You're going to more go towards that source even more only when that peace is there. So given a situation, I try to choose a path that will lead to peace. Right. So which to me, there are many obviously angles to this. The main lever being, can I hold on to ahimsa as an example? Right. So when I say things or do things, can it be from ahimsa or for ahimsa, right? With that attitude in mind. And that gives you that peace from which you can now then apply these teachings. That gives you that that helps you identify with the source more closely than otherwise, because our mind is where it is at today, right? Our samskaras are there. We are born with it. It came from multiple births before this. It is where it is at. The impurities are there, and it's going to show up because these situations will cause it to bubble up. And how do we come out of it? Are these teachings available to us at that moment of anger or frustration? are these teachings available to us? And so to me, that is that. Personally, I feel that a lot of it goes into that mental preparation. So this is what I've come to a conclusion that, you know, can I choose a path which leads to peace?
Very well said, if I may add. So you are my guru for Ahimsa.
Well said, Vidya.
So Ahimsa is, I've been practicing that, and Kishore, thanks to you, long back, I had a question about my mother, and since then I've been practicing and I've understood it much better. But if you don't practice that, you will not understand. So even if you have your own vasanas and samsaras and the way you perform or operate, you can practice it daily. And Ahimsa is one of them, which I have used almost every day, or maybe every moment, to practice, so that I am able to not just control Ahimsa in terms of anger that I used to think, or not, you know, killing anybody or those, but actually take a stand of who I am here. I am means not the small I am, but who I am, the bigger I, right? And that way, when I'm looking at me as others, and this is where I daily chant one of the shlokas that I was listening to Swami SPG, Sarva Bhutastamatmatma, Sarva Bhutani Jatmani, Vijnana Nirahankara, Nirmamam Tvam Sukhi Bhava. And the more I chant with the thought of that I have to take out each of my malam by being practicing Ahimsa, it has actually worked much better for me to think about coming to first do the first, first step, like how Kishore, you said, clean yourself first. But understand what you're cleaning. That's more important practically than to just keep on chanting things and, you know, not understanding and going further. But it is like a do, check, review. Every day you have to do and check and review. So it's like a circular thing that we have to keep on working at. Otherwise, if you don't work on it, instead of circle, it just can go somewhere else and shoot out. Then you have to bring it back to the circle and, you know, keep on doing it. So yes, that has really helped me, the understanding, being, you know, taking out ahankara by practicing less anger and less agitation and less reaction and understanding self. So thank you, Kishore.
Excellent. Excellent. Sorry.
Can I
follow that up with the question?
Sorry, I was about to, further, talk about what Vidya was saying. So can I go?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. So, even before, getting into Gita, I was, doing, Deepak Chopra. Maybe this was 6-7 years back. And, Deepak Chopra has got this very nice, audios on 7 steps to, improve your life. I don't know how many of you have listened to that. And, two things which he brings it to the front is very, very profound. Now, one, he says, don't judge people. That is the number one. He says, you keep on judging people. No, you don't understand. Huh? You think you are not judging, but your subconscious mind is constantly judging people. And that is what I'm trying to connect what Vidya just said. Even by looking at somebody and saying he is dark, you are doing ahimsa. It is not himsa. You are doing ahimsa. You are comparing yourself with him, or you are comparing bright with dark and saying that guy is dark. This guy is fat. this guy is short, you know, this guy, you know, sneezes too much. So this judgment, you know, is the biggest factor, you know, which affects your entire personality. So which means what he says is, first thing, you know, you should stop this judgment. And again, it is a part of this practice. So I think it is very, very relevant here. When you do this Vibhuti chapter, you need to understand that, you know, you shouldn't judge people. That is number one. Na? Number two, again, you know, very relevant to what Vidya was saying. Always be in the present. You know, this doesn't happen so easily. So here also he is giving several tips, you know, to make us to be in the present, which means that, you know, as simple as, you know, Vidya was saying, cutting vegetables or making food. How many of us are in the present, you know, really putting our, you know, mind into the cutting, really putting our mind into the cooking to ensure that the food comes perfectly well, you know, because I see people, you know, cutting vegetables, seeing TV, you know, I see people, you know, putting something there and then coming and after the, you know, food is cooked or more or cooked or less, you know, they finish the cooking. So this is the second thing, you know, what he says, always be in the present. So which is again, but you Srini, know, related to what we do. Sorry.
Srini, even if I cut the vegetables perfectly, it still does not come out right. Sorry.
What I'm coming to is, see, whatever you do, whatever activity you do, you know, you must do it with total devotion and you must do it with total liking. So this is the, you know, the second aspect. So when you do that, na, even the, you know, the non-living objects like vegetables or, you know, whatever, like the utensils, what you have, you fall, you know, you have respect for the utensils, you have respect for the vegetables, and then you be in the present. And then you do the cooking. So I'm just giving an example of cooking. This is applicable to even whatever happens at office also. Whether we are at the present, when we do a presentation, we think what is going to be the next meeting, right? So we are not always in the present trying to put our maximum effort into the current presentations. Okay, just an example. So these two things he says is very, very profound. And of course, there is another third thing he says, whenever you want to, you know, visit some people, always, you know, carry a gift. So the gift can be in the form of a, you know, a live present, or it can be in the form of a mind also. So always try to give people. So, and he goes on saying, there are four other traits which you need to develop. So why I thought it is relevant here is two things. The judgment, you know, I'm practicing, but still I have not totally come out of the judgment. Even today, you know, I keep judging. Oh, this guy is short, this guy is small, this guy is a little bit dark. Why his teeth is protruding? So this, I think we should connect to our Ahimsa thing and say, never judge anybody, na? Because that is how God has created him. So, you know, we have nothing to say against he is dark, he is tall, he is short, he is fat. So we should have nothing against that. And second, being in the present, again, there is another example. He says, every 1 hour, you know, you bring back yourself to the present, either by, you know, you're tapping the table, or, you know, listening to what is going around you, na? Like the running of the AC or the, you know, running of the fan, so that you always ensure that you are in the present. This normally doesn't happen is what was his perception. You are always either in the past or you are thinking about the future. You are never in the present. So I think this is very relevant here. I thought I should, you know, bring this point here to tell you that this is what is, you know, Vibhuti Darshan is all about, no? Understanding that everything in the present is relevant to us. And we have to be really alert. I think Vidya was subtly telling that the alertness in life, you know, is a practice which we need to develop. Right from the start of the day to the end of the day, we should realize that alertness, and we should always, you know, keep ensuring that, you know, we do only the good things, and maybe the bad things we try to avoid. In fact, Swami P goes to the extent of saying, right from the day you start, you know, wake up, you start brushing your teeth, you know, you should, you know, have some reverence to the tree which is giving you the twig. So now we are using toothpaste, but previously it used to be the twig. You're taking bath, you know, you should, you know, relate it to that you are actually doing an abhishekam to God, you know, considering that God is within yourself. So he goes to that extent of saying, na, every moment of life should be related to this, you know, God thinking. And only that kind of thinking will actually take you to the next step. So I just thought I will share these thoughts also as a you know, as a relevance to this Vibhuti Yoga, where we need to understand that everything related to us is a part of God. So thank you for the patient hearing.
And beautiful. Excellent. Really great. And just wanted to add that anyone has read about Prahlada, he did that. Prahlada's, whatever Srini just talked about, It's story of Prahlada, if you can just put it like that.
And Ajay, again, I think when we do... Again, when we do chapter 13, we'll understand. In fact, I was doing chapter 13 last week. So there, Swamiji very clearly says, on one side, he teaches, the hardcore Vedanta, which is like, Prakriti, Purusha, Shetram, Shetrangya, Nyayam, Neyam, everything. No? But again, in that, he says, Jnanam is nothing but your values. So until unless you develop your values, and then your values are at the utmost level, the Jnanam taking place is going to be difficult. So he is very clear in that the values are more important, and it is really important, to get into this, path of Vedantic knowledge to get the Jnanam. So that is why he also says 95% of our Vedas are Karmakandam. So which means that 95% is only Yajnas, do this thing, activities. Only 5% is Jnanakandam. So which means that, the over good emphasis is given for the Yajnas, the practices. And I think the practices will automatically lead to the Jnanam part of it. So that is how I just wanted to finish this. Sorry, I'm taking much time. I think the others can, now contribute. Thank you.
Ajay, you had a question?
No, I was just kind of slightly just referring to what Vidya said. It was beautiful about how you have to be conscious about what you're doing every moment. So for example, if you get angry, you need to be aware of it and put yourself in the other person's perspective to nullify your reaction, if you will. But one of the things that I hear, Vidya, from a lot of people is when I do not react or react for sure, is that I am being sort of aloof or, not being sort of in that conversation. So, I mean, I've seen a side effect of not being angry as something that people kind of wonder as to whether I've switched off, kind of a thing, which is not the case. But that's really a conscious attempt at anger management, if you will.
So yeah, So I went through that too. So suddenly, no anger, no reaction. People say, what happened to Vidya, right? In that process, the first thing I have to say is that also, again, it comes to like how Kishore was saying, you even that you cannot make it wrong. That is also ahimsa. So when I started not making that wrong or in my mind, that's okay, that's fine. So I started being the Vidya that I wanted to be, like, which my vasana is. So I do sometimes now express that. I wouldn't call it anger, but that's my behavior, right? Which others think that it's anger, correct? And once I behave that way, they know that, oh, Vidya's back. It happened in my office, so Vidya's back talking about it passionately. So they see as passion, right? If you don't speak up, then it's not a passion for them. But you had, or they had labeled it as anger. And as I said, Kishore is my guru. I go through that immediately and say, if I am coming across as a person who you think I'm angry, I'm sorry. I just say that. The moment I say that, they are able to listen to me and I'm able to listen to them. So this way, I'm not neither making my behavior wrong, being silent or not being silent, or making them wrong of thinking about me, like how Srini was trying to say, judging, right? So we do that judging part, we do instantly, which is our vasana, which is like a very fast thing of the small eye, right? But what we don't do is the thinking of bigger eye, which is what we need to do every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, both ways, it's a ahimsa, yeah. Understood.
So this ahimsa word is tough to understand. Every day, if you ponder on it in different situations, it reveals itself in a totally new way that you had not thought about.
Yeah,
one has not thought about. So
excellent, Vidya. I think Kishore and Vidya, one of the traits of doing this values is also taking one value and then delving deep into that. So that is what is asked to practice. And I think ahimsa is one of the topmost value, and trying to practice ahimsa is exemplary. Thank you, both of you. I think it's going to be a great exercise to practice ahimsa, because you can take other values also. Swami P keeps saying, coming to your place on time. He says that is one of the biggest value which is lacking in India. Nobody keeps time. That is number one. And number two, even when they are late, they don't have the response to say that I'll be late, I'll be coming at a different time. So which means that they don't have any respect for the other's time. So that also could be a trait which can be developed. I think it is an easier trait to develop, but I think ahimsa is one of the toughest trait to be developed. And I'm really doing sanagari to both of you practicing ahimsa, which I think I should learn from both of you, especially Kishore and Vidya. So I'll take it up at a different, session.
Just add Alpana also in that. She has been.
Okay. So see, ahimsa at mind level, ahimsa at talk level, and ahimsa at the action level. No? All the three ahimsa are important. Of course, we never do ahimsa at the action level, because we are all sane, and we are actually little bit having a good family background, that we don't treat others badly. But at the words level and at the mind level, still to me practically it is there. So I think I should also try to mitigate this or reduce this at the mind level, I think, which is the highest level of ahimsa which needs to be practiced. So thank you very much to give me this idea of to practice ahimsa. I will take tips from you later. Thank you.
If I may add just one more thing on ahimsa, while we were talking so much about it, obviously the ahimsa is one of the values, right? And just that, I think Swamiji says this quite a bit, that when you use ahimsa, it's like taking one noodle out of a bowl. It's just not possible. When you try to get one noodle, it's going to bring others. So ahimsa is going to bring many others along with it. And that's why it's very important. All values are like that, ahimsa being a very important one. Let's also remember, ahimsa is not just towards others, it's towards us as well. It's a very important one, which we tend to forget. Because if your situation is such that you are trying to make everything else fine and everybody else, what you're saying is okay, but you're getting trampled on in the process. That's ahimsa to yourself, right? Let's be aware of that. And it is not okay to have ahimsa towards ourselves as well. And very important in this. So sometimes you may have to, again, there might be a conflict, on, hey, how much compassion is okay? Is it okay for me to suffer through something, but while showing compassion towards others? How much of it is okay? That's a conflict that we might face, right? So how do you take a decision like that, right? Is it okay to be in a situation where you're trying to be good, trying to make things okay and following ahimsa, but you are suffering? Is that okay? Right. So the answer is it's not, but where you draw the line is where the conflicts will come, right? So absolutely. And again, goes back to Srini, you mentioned about the judgment part. Judging is ahimsa at the thought level. So if we catch ourselves judging, let's replace that thought with, so this is Pratipaksha Bhavanam, right? An opposite thought, which is, hey, you know what? I'm judging this person based on skin or some other characteristic. Let me replace it with how beautiful they are, right? So, and that will get reinforced in our subconscious over time. And the judgment, because mind is always going to be in associative thinking mode. It's always going to keep giving you stuff. Is it possible to step out and replace it with something else when we are conscious of it, right? So yeah, let me stop there. I know Alpana is waiting very patiently here to express her opinion. Go ahead, please.
No, just a couple of points, and they are probably diagonally opposite to what we have been discussing. But I think Rick did refer to them a little bit. So when we are talking about being judgmental, we are saying we shouldn't be judgmental. But we are not the mind. So aren't we judgmental towards mind when we say mind is at peace, mind is not at peace? Mind is, I am good, I am not good. What? That's the body, the mind, the whole complex. Because, so we are being judgmental towards something which we are not. So it is as external as we are being judgmental to anybody else. So that's one side of it. The other side is, as who we are, we cannot be judgmental because Brahman cannot be judgmental. So there's, the problem itself doesn't exist. And the solution is actually to repeat that I am not that. Why do I want to fix it? I'm actually a karta, a bhokta. I cannot do anything. It's just not possible. And going back to Gun's question, once you're established in that, you will look at the situation and then the body mind will do whatever needs to be done based upon its swabhav, based upon its this thing, but with lesser identification with it. So one big part of the mind to look good, to be good, is dropped in that process. And it will do mostly what is beneficial for the situation. If no one else is doing and that thing needs to be done, you need a body. It's actually, body shopping is a very good example. This is how even this body is. It will do it. But if we can just think again and again, actually all these values, what we are saying, they are how a jnani operates. And because we say they become practices for a seeker, yes, we look at them. But if you go into really in depth of all of these values, they're only possible for a jnani when he knows there's no ahimsa, because the jnani can, as a Atman, as Brahman, I cannot do anything. So I cannot even do hinsa or ahimsa. Similarly, Arjavam, there is nothing else. So if we can be established in that and think about that, and that's probably a Nididhyasan which I'm suggesting in any of the situation. The moment you see the mind is getting worked up, look at it from outside. The moment you distance yourself, the mind anyway will not be worked up by those thoughts. It may be worked up because of the situation, but then it'll deal with it. Because there's no ahankar coming in between. Because that ahankar you've just taken away. That's the only thing that you need to do. So if you can think those two things, who am I really? I am a karta, a bhokta. So I cannot do anything. And then on the other side, why are you judging even the mind and the body?
Oh, okay. Very beautiful, Alpana. I think that's the next step we have to move to.
Is that a gradation in thinking, is kind of what I'm thinking. Like, you know, you, at some level, Alpana, you get to that place where you're able to do that. So what you're saying is true. But in early on in the development of our spiritual journey, perhaps there is adherence to it, and then later on it becomes natural.
So a little bit is required, but if you keep focusing on the other side, how will you switch to this?
But again, that is given the time.
I mean, just think about it as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because, exactly.
Yes, see, it is important what you have to do initially to even come to the scriptures and have that focus
to study it, to look at it, to understand it. Yes, initially, yes, a little bit is required, but how much is required? Do we need to continue to pursue that? Or yes, we've come to the scriptures, we are reading it. Actually, you know, one good thing, if one doesn't study the full Gita book, is you keep repeating the second chapter and you keep reading the first part of it, which is actually what is really required. Just read first three shlokas from 12, 13, 14 or 11, 12, 13.
11,
12. They are more than enough to explain who we are. And if we don't get it, there are enough things which are being told later. But to get that, yes, I understand. So I'm not saying the practices are not important, but how much importance do we keep giving it? Because at some point, they will become hindrance. And there is a leap of faith, yes, required. But that will come only by thinking through it. Thinking about it, right? So that's why I think, bringing back the same point again and again, that yes, it's important.
I guess these are, there were multiple approaches.
Absolutely, I agree.
Understand.
Yeah,
exactly. I completely get your point.
Correct.
But I think where Alpana is going is, even if we have multiple approaches, that final approach is what we need to get to. And what I'm understanding, maybe you can correct me, is that when there is no ahankar, then all this nididhyasanam that we are doing, a part of nididhyasanam, is to move towards saying that we are not this. Okay.
Also,
thank you.
Sorry.
No, I was just saying thank you.
There's also starting with the end in mind. And the end in mind is acknowledging that I am ever free. I can never be otherwise. Now, I will say, Kishore, in terms of work, I used to have this image, which I got from Aldous Huxley's wife, wrote a book called You Are Not the Target. She was a psychologist. And I would use this mental image when I felt under attack of a bullfighter who takes his thing and lets the bull run through it. So he keeps moving it so he is not the target. So literally, when people would attack me or say things to me, I would think, I am not the target. I am not the target. The whole purpose being to give me space to respond as opposed to react. And to this day, I mean, you know, everyone's buttons get pushed. My wife knows where all of mine are. And so if they get pushed, my immediate response is take a deep breath, which is just my way of saying, I am not going to react. I'm going to respond. The other thing I would say about work is I really do believe understanding it's a role I play. It's not who I am is critical. And along with that is to try to make the attempt to be dharmic in all my actions. As long as I'm an actor, let me be a dharmic actor. But ultimately, beginning and end, the acceptance, the affirmation of who I really am is the end, but it's the beginning and it's the quickest way home.
Excellent. Excellent, Rick.
Booms, you have something? You raised your hand.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, today is a beautiful journey. And Alpana, you brought us back to the fundamental, like what you were saying. And I think Rick started us off there as well. Somehow we have to keep traveling this journey on a daily basis. That's the trick here. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, finally, I think, you know, what Alpana was referring is, I think, shifting the frame of reference from the body-mind complex to, I think, the Atma. So we need to start looking ourselves as the Atma. Then I think things will become more clear. This is what I've understood. Maybe, you know, we can debate this more in the next session. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, actually, as kids always refer to themselves as third person, right?
if you've heard kids, how they say, oh, they'll take the name, say Tom. Tom is drinking, Tom is walking, Tom is doing. I think we should just go back to that same thing. Alpana is drinking, Alpana is walking, somebody else.
This is beautiful. So my daughter used to do that all the time.
Yeah.
And guess what? Her name is Maya. It's amazing.
Even better. Maya is doing.
Oh, I'm not going to forget this.
Yeah. All right. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah.
Hari Om.
Hari Om to all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.